Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here at 88.1 FM, WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host today is Jerry Parrotsman.
Good morning again.
And I'm continue to see you get better, Jerry.
Right. We're each passing moment.
And we're here with Bill Blyer, who is the author of, I didn't want to say it correctly, Long Island and the Civil War. Right. I had said, I think, earlier in the Civil War. It's just tremendous, the information that was gathered to put this book together. But I'm going to go right back to Bill so that we don't waste time and continue on with military operations that occurred on Long Island.
Okay. So, I mean, other than the training camps that I mentioned, there were no battles with Confederates on Long Island, but there was a lot of Civil War activity going on regardless. The Confederate raiders, which were preying on Union commerce, were capturing Union trading vessels as close as 8 miles off Montauk Point. Mm. There was another incident down towards Sandy Hook, New Jersey, where a Confederate raider captured a Port Jefferson trading schooner called the S.J. Waring, which had a black steward on board. And they put Confederates on the ship, and they were trying to take it down to Charleston to cash it in, and they made the mistake of telling the steward, William Tillman, that they were going to sell. He was a free black, but they said, they told him, when you get to Charleston, we're going to make you a slave. Tillman didn't like the idea, so he got help from one of the other captured crewmen, and in the middle of the night got a hatchet and bashed in the brains of the Confederates, and the two of them sailed the ship back to New York, where they were hailed as heroes.
Wow.
So that was close. And then there's what I call, sort of half as a joke, as the Civil War Battle of Long Island. I mentioned the training camps.
Right.
And Willets Point was a big training camp, and a gentleman named Christo, and nobody knows his first name, gathered up 100 of his neighbors and friends and formed a company of infantrymen, and goes to the training camp, to enlist these guys. And the officer in charge of the camp said, "Okay, you're now in this regiment, whatever. It's not even known what the regiment is, but he didn't like the choice for some reason." And they said, "Well, we don't want to serve with these guys. We're leaving. We'll go find some other regiment in some other training camp." And the officers in the training camp said, "Well, you're in the army. You can't just come and go as you please." So they alerted the guards, and at midnight, Christo and his men picked up and tried to leave the camp. And the guards had been alerted, and they confronted them. And one of Christo's men fired a pistol by mistake, and then the troops guarding the perimeter fired their muskets at these guys, and they killed four of them and wounded others.
Oh, wow.
So there was actually Civil War bloodshed on Long Island,
right.
But it was sort of brother against brother, friendly fire in a sense.
Bill, was there any measure of how many Long Island men who served died in the war?
Well, we know of at least 3,000 Long Islanders who served, mm-hmm. and you'd have to go through every record of all of them, which a gentleman named Bob Farrell I know is actually compiling this list of every actual individual and what happened to them, where they're buried, which I've written about. But I'm guessing disease killed more people during the war than battle injuries. By far, because a lot of these people were thrown together. Mm. There's farm boys, never experienced a lot of being in a mass situation. A lot of disease was rampant. A lot of them had dysentery because the food wasn't great. The sanitary conditions could be terrible. So, you're probably talking about somewhere about 300 of them probably died during the war, and the majority of them would have been from disease.
Wow, that's amazing. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Well, it's true. You're taking them from a farm and putting them into an environment that nobody was ready, the health conditions, et cetera, when you're thousands of people confined. And
The diseases would whatever disease struck would sweep through the whole camp.
Right, and there was no antibiotics at the time to turn around and give you something.
People would die. A lot of them died from, like, dysentery, which now you take a pill and you're fine.
Right.
Once they had the runs so badly that they couldn't eat or, function, this would actually dehydrate them, knew that that was the part of the problem. So the medical care was so rudimentary that people would die from dysentery and other things.
Amazing. Actually, when you just said, one of you guys said it about brother, friendly fire or whatever. A couple of years ago, I was at West Point, and there's a monument in West Point to the Civil War. And that's the first time it really struck me that it really was, that it should never happen again. It was brother against brother.
Yeah.
You know, other wars, it's human against human.
Mm. Yeah,
but
well,
this one was your neighbor.
Yeah, well, a lot of the officers who graduated from West Point, half of them were Southerners, and they would end up fighting each other. And, you know, there's a lot of cases where somebody would be fatally wounded, and the officer would from the other side would come across them and, you know, make sure they got sent home to be buried.
Right, right, right.
But
you reference in the book the Bayless brothers,
right? We didn't get into every soldier because, you know, we didn't have the time, and,
course,
a lot of them were, you know, it's hard to find information. Mm-hmm. But as I was doing research at the Suffolk County Historical Society in Riverhead, I stumbled across the two brothers who became emotionally the closest to me. I mean, they just struck me, and I felt this sort of kinship and interest in them. Which was Albert and Edward Bayless from the 139th New York Infantry, and they grew up on their family farm in Middle Island. And Albert, 23, became a sergeant. He was a school teacher before the war, and his brother Edward, 21, was a farm laborer on the family farm. But they were both highly literate and very perceptive and very funny. So I'm reading the letters chronologically in the archives in Riverhead, and just immediately took a liking to these guys. And I'll give you a couple of examples. They go from Middle Island. They get recruited, go to training camp in Brooklyn, and they start writing home. And one of the letters, Edward says, we got to Brooklyn, and the first thing they did is put us to work pitching tents for us to live in. And he says, in the first half hour in that training camp, I heard more profanity than I've heard in my entire life. Then they go to Washington. Edward writes home, we went around the city to the Capitol, the house where Uncle Abe lives, and at other public edifices. They rather look ahead of anything around Middle Island. So their letters are just like this. The food was pretty terrible, but for the Bayless brothers and a lot of the guys in the war, this was the great adventure of their life.
When you read these are copies? Are these the actual letters? Oh, no, these are copies of the letters.
I actually was reading transcripts. Subsequently, I was doing a lecture at the Longwood Library in Middle Island, right. And they have all the original Bayless material.
They do? Wow.
They have all the original. One of their descendants had compiled all their letters and other things. The Longwood Library has the original letters. They have original Civil War photographs of them taken at a Riverhead photo studio, and other. They have funeral cards for their funeral.
Okay.
So these guys were really interesting. They didn't actually get into the war until the Battle of Cold Harbor in 1864, and they probably could not have picked a worse battle to get into the war, because if people that know the war. Know that Cold Harbor was what U.S. Grant later said was his worst mistake in the war, which was ordering a frontal assault on entrenched Confederates outside Richmond. And they get down there, and they're digging trenches around the clock for 4 days, watching artillery go off over their heads. And then finally, their regiment is ordered to charge. And as soon as they get out of their own trenches, Albert was shot, and Edward was nearby and sees this and tries to rush to his brother's aid. The other soldiers in their company are trying to grab him and pull him back undercover. He breaks free and is rushing to his brother when a sharpshooter kills him. So the two of them died seconds apart, side by side on the Cold Harbor battlefield, where they're still buried. Mm. Out in Middle Island, there's a big monument to them erected by their family and friends, but they're actually still down in Virginia.
Oh, okay.
I'm reading their letters chronologically and sort of rooting for them because they're really funny and perceptive. And all of a sudden their letters stop, and in the file is a letter from their commander of their unit writing to their parents to tell the story I just told about how they died. So it was like, I felt like I lost relatives. I was very depressed.
Wow. I mean, that's I'm feeling what you're feeling to a degree, not as much that how you research this. It's almost like your family then. You read, look what so-and-so did, and it's Aunt Susie, and this is what happened, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, there's other Long Islanders like Henry Prince from the North Fork who wrote, you know, really nice series of letters or diaries. So we have a lot of that in the book, but the Bayless brothers just hit a chord with me.
Right, okay, that's fine.
But we should talk about, as much as I like them, we should talk about Obadiah Jackson Downing, who by far is the most interesting Long Islander who fought in the war. He was a lawyer from East Williston. And he
North Hempstead boy.
North Hempstead boy, and he joined the Second New York Cavalry, which there was a surprising number of cavalrymen from Long Island because they were farm boys and they ended up their way around horses. Some of them even brought their own horses with them. So Obadiah Jackson Downey, he enlists and the Second New York Cavalry, which was the biggest cavalry unit for this area. He ended up fighting in 130 battles and skirmishes, including Brandy Station in Virginia, which was the biggest cavalry battle ever on American soil, where he gets trapped behind enemy lines, spends 24 hours fighting and evading his way back across the river to the Union lines, and manages to get back with all 50 of his troopers without ever having a scratch on any one of them, which is pretty amazing.
That's huge.
So for that, he was promoted to captain. Then he was captured twice in the same raid on Richmond in 1864, and he escaped twice, and then was recaptured both times, and then paroled in exchange for a Confederate officer, and then he joined the staff of General George Custer, who at that point was a rising star in the Union cavalry, and was buried at West Point.
Right. Okay.
Then he goes on to keep fighting, and then at the end of the war. Talk about being in the right or wrong place at the right time. When after Lee surrenders in April of 65, Downing's commander sends him and another officer from the 2nd Cavalry to Washington carrying captured Confederate flags. So they deliver them to the War Department as ordered, and then they have spare time in Washington, so they say, let's go to the theater. So they end up at Ford's Theater on April 14th, 1865, witnessed Lincoln getting shot, and Downing later wrote a letter describing how he helped carry Lincoln's body across the street to the Peterson House where Lincoln died.
That's amazing.
So he comes back after the war, becomes a state senator. Then he moves to Michigan and becomes one of the first industrial-sized farmers in the Midwest and became very successful and very prominent. So
this is amazing, actually, but we're out of time. Is there a phone number that if people want to get in touch with you?
Best thing would be email.
Email?
It's Bill Blyer, B-L-E-Y-E-R, at gmail.com.
Bill Blyer at gmail.com.
Right.
And the book can be bought
everywhere.
Any place.
Online, bookstores.
Long Island and the Civil War. But really, email Bill if you want. Maybe he makes presentations.
Yeah, there's a Facebook page of Long Island and the Civil War, which has the details in the book, has details of our lectures, and a way to get signed copies for people that
want
it.
Long Island and the Civil War. Any questions, everybody knows who's listening, call 311. We'll give you Bill's email over the phone. And this has really been such an education. What a wonderful work you've done. Terrific.
Thank you.
You're listening to 88.1 FM, WCWP.org. We'll be right back.